streaming.afa.net has now become AFA Stream, and you can find it at stream.afa.net. You see, we removed the letters ING. Our experts have determined that eliminating those three keystrokes, multiplied over hundreds of thousands of AFA Stream visits, could reduce the national debt and maybe increase the gross domestic product. AFA Stream, formerly streaming.afa.net. Improvements to the economy are purely theoretical.
Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Today's Issues. Fred Jackson here, along with Wesley Wildman. Good morning, Wesley.
And good morning.
And Alex McFarland joining us from the great state of North Carolina.
Good morning, everybody.
Good to have you. And Chris Woodward from the AFR Newsroom.
Good morning.
Good to have you guys.
Now, Fred, are we going to tell anybody, or anybody, we're going to tell our audience that we did not plan this?
We did not plan this?
And those that are listening have no idea what we're talking about. But those that are watching know that we all are matching.
Yes, yes.
Everybody but Alex. But
yeah, that's we're in the green.
That's right, we're in the green. We did not plan this, but we are matching.
And we
did. I did not get the memo.
I'm sorry about that, Alex.
Maybe tomorrow.
That would be a good day for a Christmas picture for T.I., except for we don't have the two main hosts. So
we'll go by the tree down there.
That's right.
And take a picture together.
All right. Yeah. Tim and Ed are away today. Your dad will be back tomorrow, Wesley.
That's right.
Back in the chair tomorrow.
And I'll be out tomorrow, even though I'm usually on Wednesday. So.
Yes. Musical chairs.
That's right.
That's okay. It's a holiday week. It's Thanksgiving.
Uh-huh.
And I tell you what, if you've been out at all, the shoppers have gone crazy, absolutely crazy. Parking lots are full. Black Friday is now 2 weeks, starts 2 weeks before Black Friday.
Yeah, it does.
I am convinced.
It'll be in October before too long.
Yeah. Next year, it's going to start on January 2nd.
I tell you what. And, you know, people are out of the mind. Now, I know a lot of folks are Amazon shoppers.
Sure, you got a lot of that.
But you know what? At least in the town where we live here in Tupelo, Mississippi, people are still very dedicated to going shopping at the brick-and-mortar stores.
They do. They seem like they can find – I guess they – I don't do that, so I don't know what the – I'd have to ask my wife. She does like to do that. I guess they think that there's a better deal that you're not wanting to miss or something. I don't know. It's hard to believe nowadays that you still do that as much as what we're seeing because of online.
Mm-hmm. I think people just enjoy getting out.
Okay.
And they like kind of feeling the box.
I like getting out. I don't like the crowds.
Yeah, I know.
But yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I know we have it's a holiday week, for want of the better broad term. Mm-hmm. And normally news slows down, but that is not the case.
No.
We have a plethora of stories to get to today, so we're going to set you aloose.
Yes, this one kind of sort of involves it does involve an issue that was an issue in this particular election, that being the issue of males and female sports. We've got a lot to cover here with this particular segment, and I have several sound bites. So bear with me here, but let's begin with this one. A judge yesterday rejected a request to block a San Jose State women's volleyball team member from playing in a conference tournament on grounds that other players argue that individual is actually a biological male. As we have reported on AFN.net, SJSU, or San Jose State University, has a male on the female volleyball team, and for several months now, a number of schools and their female volleyball teams have forfeited matches against SJSU because they have a male on the female volleyball team. And yesterday, a Biden judge ruled that that player, who has played all regular season, can continue competing in the Mountain West Conference in the women's championship scheduled for later this week in Las Vegas. I reached out to a young lady yesterday who was a captain of one of those teams that forfeited matches against SJSU. Sia Laili is a captain at the University of Nevada, Reno, one of the schools that forfeited the match, and she said it was disheartening, and she really sympathizes with anybody that has to face this team going forward. Clip 8.
I think it's disheartening, the results that we're faced with, and I'm disappointed that these women have to take on that added pressure of having to face a male player. And I just think that it's not right that they're being put in that position. Taking a forfeit during the season is very different from taking a forfeit in the Mountain West tournament, because one loss means that you're out and you're out of contention. So I just wish the best of luck to these women who are in that position.
I tell you what, Wesley, this is disturbing on a number of fronts. You have now teams forfeiting rather than in danger of female teams forfeiting in a league because they're scared that they're going to get hurt by this biological male on the other team. Added to that, members of the same team that this guy is playing on are also concerned. And we have another story that Chris is going to get to in a moment. But in broader terms, where is the feminist movement that say, you know, we're out here to protect women's rights? They are silent.
When this, when I first remember this beginning to be an issue on a national scale was the Connecticut high school female track. And at that point, obviously, our position hasn't changed. The Christian position hasn't changed. It's wrong for a man to compete in women's sports, bottom line, okay, for a variety of different reasons. However, for the general public, you could see that there was not a physical how do I put this? There was no punching. There was no harm done. It was just one was faster than the other.
Yeah.
Okay. But we're when this is now transitioning into sports where there's becoming like either whether it's kickboxing, whether it's basketball, and now volleyball, you're seeing not only like you saw in track where they were physically faster, stronger, and bigger, now they're bumping. You understand there's a physical contact.
Yeah.
And so now we're reaching a point where it's like, you're seeing the tides turn when the general public sees how insane this is. Well, and also how unfair it is.
Yeah.
Not to mention what is more concerning, the most concerning for me, is them being forced to share locker rooms.
Oh, yeah.
The privacy issue. Mm-hmm. There's multiple issues here, but the more they allow this to continue to go on, the more other women are going to get hurt, the more the other women are robbed from the opportunity to compete. And then back to the point that you just made about the where's the feminist movement. I mean, that was the whole point of that was a big point of Title IX, the feminist movement, is for women to be able to compete in all sports at an equal level. And what are we, how far are we past that now?
Oh, yeah.
15 or 20 years, and here we're at full circle. We got men and women's sports.
And Alex, the defiance of basic biology here. You know, the fact that we're now paying attention to someone who says, you know, a guy who says, I feel like a girl, therefore I am.
Right.
I mean, we've reached a level of insanity here.
Did you guys see several days ago the Democrat representative from Montana, Zoe Zephyr, said, and I quote, that transgender women. Okay, now, let's be clear, because we have to, you know, keep all the semantics in check. When you see the term transgender woman, that's really a male masquerading as a female. But Zoe Zephyr said transgender women are, quote, every bit as biologically female as cis women. Now, CIS, that's the Latin word for same. So whenever they talk about cisgender, that's really an insult on their part because, you know, cisgender people are just not woke yet. But, I mean, to say that a man who identifies as a woman is, quote, every bit as biologically female as a woman, that's just not reality.
No.
That's craziness. But here's the thing, like, to Wesley's point about privacy being ignored, injuries to true females being ignored, and just the emotional scarring of having to be in a restroom or a changing room with a pervert man. Here's the thing. Human welfare is subordinate to the ideology.
Yeah.
Well, I got to wonder Where is there? I'm guessing there has been. I just wonder when there's going to be this major lawsuit. I'm guessing there's some lawsuits out there. I don't know.
It will happen.
It will happen. But at some point, there has to be a lawsuit. And either there has been and there's been a payout or something. But there at some point, there's going to be a major lawsuit where a female, biological female, wins multi-million dollars for having been injured by a male.
Yeah.
And against a,
especially there's now a record of open concern.
There you go.
There are court cases. Mm-hmm. That if this male on the other side of the volleyball net spikes and hits me and knocks me out and causes physical injury to me, you're right, there's going to be lawsuits. Now, Chris.
Oh, and in the privacy issue, too.
Yes. Now, Chris, there is another case that we heard about yesterday. This involves a high school girl playing, it's a track, she's a
cross country
runner who went to a school board meeting to express her concern, and we're going to hear some of that.
High school student Riley Morrow is a student in the Riverside, California area, and she was on with Fox and Friends today to talk about this issue with her attorney, Julianne Fleischer. Here now is Morrow talking about sharing her thoughts on this situation, clip 9.
I have been around the females and just my team in general who have felt almost silenced to speak out about it because the whole LGBTQ is shoved down our throats. And going into a locker room and seeing males in there, I don't find that safe. It's not okay. I'm a 16-year-old girl. There's girls around me where we do not feel safe having boys in our environment.
I got to tell you, I heard the same exact thing in Mississippi about a year ago from Riley Gaines and Paula Scanlon, two female athletes in the swimming sport that didn't want to have to compete against Leah Thomas. And they didn't just have to compete against Leah Thomas. They had to undress in the same locker room as a dude.
Yeah. Where is it? Where's the uproar? You have her lawyer also talking.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. This is attorney Julianne Fleischer. She's representing Riley Morrow, who we just heard of there. She was also on Fox and Friends today. Clip 10.
Based on two causes of action, one is a Title IX issue, which resulted from a Taylor, who is a junior at the Martin Luther King High School. She was on the varsity top seven. And when this transgender student transferred to the girls' high school, Taylor was removed from the varsity team. And in her place, this biological male was placed on her team. And then the other side of this is a free speech cause of action. Following Taylor's displacement on the varsity team, the girls wore shirts that said Save Girls Sports. That's what the front of the shirt said. They wore it to their practice, and the athletic director told them that they needed to hide their shirt or change their shirts because that message, Save Girls Sports, creates a hostile environment.
I got to tell you, if somebody wore trans rights or human rights, the school wouldn't have a problem with it.
Right, that political statement, not a problem. It's either it's either you choose whatever political statement you want to put in your shirt or no political statements. Right. You can't be for one or not the other. What were you going to say, Frank?
No, and that's another aspect of this. These girls, what is it, Save Girls Sports?
Save Women's Sports.
Save Women's Sports. And they're right. They're out there fighting for girls.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you what, I think this had, I think Steve Durdall was showing us some stats on this, I think, the other day. This trans issue played a role in Donald Trump's victory.
Mm-hmm.
It did. Yep. It's on the minds, and here's the reason why. You have Democrat moms who have daughters who play volleyball.
Right. That's right.
And on track and then swim teams, and they're not going along with this nonsense.
No, they're not. You know, I'm thinking about this, okay? I was talking about the issue when we were talking about college students, and I'm starting to get mad as a dad now that you're talking about high school students.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking that's closer to my kid's age. Mm-hmm. Then when is this going to get down into middle school?
Yeah.
If it's not already, I bet it already has in some ways. But that you want to talk about now I'm seeing myself walk out on the court going, okay, well, you know what? I identify because that's me and you go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If this is what it comes down, I'm being sorry. I would never identify that way. But the idea is that there's going to be a dad out there that goes, wait a minute.
Yeah.
If either You're a dude, but you want to call yourself a woman? Okay, well, then I'll be a 13-year-old woman.
Yeah.
And we're, I mean, you and I could play volleyball against each other, because at some point you're going to get some dad out of the stands that's going to get on the court, especially when you start getting down into high school, middle school.
Yeah. Yeah, and Alex, we can't leave it up to the courts, unfortunately, because of this Biden-appointed judge yesterday in the San Jose case, who's not willing to protect girls in the name of political correctness. It's going to take political leadership here. We've got to overturn some of these laws that are being misinterpreted and start protecting our daughters.
Exactly. And you know, what about the deafening silence from the feminists? I mean, where is Ms. Magazine or the National Organization for Women, you know, standing up for the rights of females? Wesley, to your point, talking about getting down into high school, middle school, and below, this was in the news this morning, a New York elementary school is teaching a, quote, gender identity course to kindergartners, to kindergartners, and urging, it's Hillside Elementary in New York, teaching kids that they can pick their gender and that they don't have to go with normative boy-girl roles and dress. You know, I'm going to say this. This is an example of fallen humans wanting to be their own God.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's some things about life that the good Lord chooses. Where we were born, when we were born, who our parents were. We don't have any choice in that. And something else that we don't choose, God chose it for us, is our gender. And you know, this is one thing that I'm so glad AFA is doing biblical worldview with Activate, that, you know, maleness and femaleness is a wonderful part of what it means to be a human being. And I just think the defiance against this is one more attempt of sinners trying to be their own God.
Amen. Alex talks about Activate. That is your project.
Yes, that's something we've worked on over the last couple of years. We've got the Activate Worldview Training Course, the curriculum, which it covers five core issues of AFA, but we also have the summit that's coming up in the summer. So there's two different ones. Both of those can be found at activate.afa.net. That's activate.afa.net. Both you can find their training curriculum, where we cover this issue and other issues that AFA covers regularly. We cover religious liberty. We cover life issue, we cover marriage and family, we cover the authority of Scripture, and we cover stewardship as well. And that training course is there, but also go check it out, because there's a 20% discount for the next couple of months to sign up to come to our annual conference. So,
and it's so important, Wesley, and I hope folks in our audience, whether you're mom and dad, whether you're a grandfather, grandmother, this is going to hit your family at some point.
That's right.
You've got kids coming along. And what Activate is going to help you to do is, how do you respond?
That's it. That's the whole thing. That's what separates it from all the other training courses. Because there's a lot of really good activated biblical worldview training courses out there. But this has challenges and opportunities to practice out, to live out the things that we learn on this issue as well.
Yep. It's going to hit you.
Yep.
Somewhere along the way, folks, it is going to hit you. And you've got to start fighting this now. You got to start fighting at the local level, the school board level.
That's right.
Because that's so often, Alex, as you just pointed out, that's where this kind of demonic ideology is being taught when it's in our schools. You mentioned that example of an elementary school.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
And let me say something, guys, and I won't digress too far on this, but last week I was in a board meeting with a very, very major ministry, and we had several hours of interaction with some very godly attorneys. And I just want to say this to all the churches out there. Most churches, they'll have maybe their bylaws and as a separate document, their statement of faith. And we didn't plan this, so I don't mean to go off on a rabbit trail, but this is worth saying. I want to encourage churches out there, and I've got this from some of the best Christian legal minds out there. You need to put your doctrinal statement in your articles of incorporation. Because, see, LGBTQ trans culture warriors, they might say, gee, we want to rent your fellowship hall, or we want to rent your sanctuary. And if you've let anybody else use it, what you have to do, put your doctrinal statement, and you need in your doctrinal statement to say, human life is sacred, marriage is between one genetic male and one genetic female, gender, we are wonderfully and immutably made. And then you basically want to be in a position where all of your ministry as a church flows from your sincerely held biblical convictions. Mm-hmm. And guys, I'll throw it back to you, but churches, you need to preemptively, ahead of the curve, make sure that you're protected from the lawsuits mm-hmm. that might invariably come along from the ideological warriors that are around us.
I will tell you, on a related note to what Alex just shared, this year at the Pray Vote Stand Summit, which FRC puts on and AFA Action sponsors, there in Washington, D.C., Macy Petty, another well-known volleyball player speaking out about males and female sports, she was on a panel discussion with various other people, including somebody from Concerned Women for America. And Macy made the point that we need more Christians and Christian schools to take a stand on this issue of males and female sports. Macy went on to share the story. I'm going to try to find the link on AFN.net. But Macy went on to tell the story about how she went and confronted the president of a well-known Christian university, who Macy said, quote, would not look me in the eye when I presented her a petition on this issue, being a petition to fight males and female sports.
Yeah, listen, folks, you can win these battles. And we have a story at AFN.net right now. You may not have heard this, but Walmart announced yesterday that basically it's moving away from its DEI policies, diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is a big story. Walmart is, I still think, the world's biggest retailer.
One of the biggest retailers.
One of the, I guess, after Amazon now. But Walmart, they've had this diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, you know, pro-homosexual, give favor to certain groups, all of that sort of thing. And this is a result, Wesley, really, of groups like American Family Association and others saying, no, reverse racism doesn't work.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't work. And your involvement, Walmart, in pride parades and that sort of thing, the vast majority of your customers don't approve of this. Mm-mm. And you need to be aware of this. And all of this, a lot of it stems from, quite frankly, the Supreme Court decision when it comes to fairness with the sexes.
Yeah, it was Robert Starbuck.
Starbuck.
Robert, yeah, Starbuck. Is it Robert? Is that his first
Robbie.
Name? Robbie.
Robbie Starbuck.
Robbie Starbuck. Starbuck, who has really helped out on this area as well, and I'm thankful for him for that. But you're right, now's the time to seize on this moment, because we already had momentum before the election. We were winning many of the corporate and college campuses who were doing away with their DEI departments, so we're already making good headway on that area, which I wanted to remind our audience that we are winning things.
Yes,
and we're winning this one. Mm-hmm. But now's the time to put fuel on the fire, because as a result of the election, we're able to say now the majority of Americans have already voted against this as well. Not just that we have momentum, but now we have an election to look at as results as well. I want to go back for just a moment to something that Alex said, a question he had, and it was a good one. Where is all the feminist movements or activists on this? There was one not many of them, but one every now and then will jump ship or take a different angle, and that was J.K. Rowling, if you remember her. But we all know what happened to her, right? She got she was no longer invited to a seat at the table after she spoke out against it, even though she's far from being a conservative, even a moderate at best. And she spoke. I was going to ask. I wonder. I can't log into my Twitter account. Has she commented on any of this recently?
I'll look it up.
Let's check that out, because she always ends up having very good comments on this. And
she's been pretty courageous.
Yeah.
All right. All right. When we come back, our own Jenna Ellis will be with us. And we're going to be talking about some of President-elect Donald Trump's selections so far for his cabinet. There was the big controversy about Matt Gaetz, and you're all familiar with that. But there are others now questioning some of the ones that he has chosen. they may be in conflict with the values that perhaps you voted for Trump in the last election. So we'll be talking about that when we come back on this Tuesday edition of Today's Issues. Don't go away, folks.
If we learned anything from this election, it's how important it is for us to fight, fight, fight. We also learned how desperately the left wants to fight to take babies' lives, which is why every day Preborn Ministries fights for the babies. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, fighting for mothers deciding between the life and death of their child. Preborn welcomes these women with God's love and offers them a free ultrasound to introduce their precious baby and hear the beautiful heartbeat. This amazing encounter gives her baby a fighting chance, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. Would you join Preborn in the fight for life? One ultrasound is just $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. And now, through a match, your gift is doubled. Babies are worth fighting for. To donate, dial #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. All gifts are tax deductible, and Preborn has a 4-star charity rating. Fight, fight, fight for the babies.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And indeed, welcome back to Today's Issues. Tim and Ed are away today. Tim will be back tomorrow, but with me in studio right now is Wesley Wildman and Alex McFarland from North Carolina and Chris Woodward from American Family News. And joining us now is Jenna Ellis, host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, right here on this here radio station. Jenna, good morning.
Good morning, and great to join you and the guys, and happy Thanksgiving.
All right. Have you got your turkey purchased yet? Have you?
You know, I know this is Thanksgiving heresy, but I am not a super big fan of turkey. I prefer the honey-baked ham. That's always kind of my go-to, so my family, we actually do both.
Oh, right. Well, sounds good. Sounds good. Hey, listen, you know, if people thought that newsrooms could go to sleep after the election, think again. Along comes Donald Trump. And Jenna, do you think he had all of these names already selected and he's just of the cabinet post, all of that sort of thing? Was this all planned and it would be, I'll use the term, spewed out so quickly in the wake of the election?
Well, knowing Donald Trump and having worked for him, that would actually shock me if this was pre-planned. I think that that a lot of these were kind of, you know, even if people had suggested this and there were a few names on the list and all of that, it's never a final decision until he actually announces the pick. And I think we saw that especially with the Attorney General pick of Matt Gaetz, which then he ended up withdrawing. And now Pam Bondi, who is a fantastic choice, by the way. I've known Pam personally for years. She is incredible. She is a really tenacious lawyer. I think she'll be excellent. But I think that the timing of all of these has been intentional because it hasn't allowed for the media and critics to really isolate just one pick and kind of go after them as if they had come out, you know, with days and several news cycles of time in between. We have gotten this, you know, really quick just flurry of cabinet picks. But I will say one other thing too. Isn't it ridiculous and utterly absurd that Trump filled his cabinet before the state of California finished counting their votes?
That is an excellent, excellent point. Well, you know,
I didn't realize that. Okay. Wow.
I knew
they were last, but the comparison between the two is, I'm going to have to take a minute on this one.
I think some of the ballots were carried in by carrier pigeon.
Okay, makes sense.
That's the pigeons got lost.
That's what happened.
Okay. All right, there's some names that are creating some controversy that go well beyond Matt Gaetz, Jenna. The Trump pick for Secretary of Labor, Lori Chavez de Remmer, I believe it is. She's out of Washington State. There's some controversy because she is like pro-union to the teeth.
Yeah, and the New York Post and their headline a couple of days ago was Trump's labor pick is quote-unquote toxic, anti-conservative rhino who is too close to unions, critics allege, not serious. This is one pick that I think could have been better and definitely may prove to be a mistake. And so, you know, it is important that we as conservatives and especially as Christians go through these picks and fairly critique whether or not they should actually be in this position. Because, you know, and I was there during the first Trump administration, and I can truthfully say that even from some from my own observations and being very close to the administration, seeing how underserved Trump was by people who came in that he himself appointed that really didn't go along with his agenda and really didn't have the perspective of fulfilling America First as he wanted it. And so he was very much an underserved president in that way. And I think that he may be shooting himself in the foot in some ways by picking some of these individuals for these types of appointments, particularly this one with Lori Chavez de Remmer, that really isn't well liked by conservatives and may have an anti-America First agenda in some respects.
Some people said it's kind of a quid pro quo in that he got the endorsement of the Teamsters Union, and this was aimed at making them happy.
There's probably some truth to that. I mean, certainly, you know, we're all aware that there are, you know, some of these backroom deals that go on, or there are some, you know, well, thank you for, you know, your loyalty and service. Otherwise, you know, some of these, especially like the AFPI picks. So, for example, you know, Linda McMahon being one of those who, you know, she was one of the co-chairs of AFPI and getting the pick as education secretary when, and I think she'll do an okay job. I mean, if she shuts it down, then that'll be a phenomenal job. That's something Trump promised to do even his first term. But there were some other probably better picks that he could have chosen for that particular post. But it is one of those things where, you know, maybe the earning of the position isn't so much on merit for the position itself, but rather for what else you brought to the table.
This is Wesley here, Jenna. There's several names that we've heard, you know, over the last couple of weeks. You got Pete Hegseth, as you mentioned earlier, Pam Bondi. There's several that I've seen and I'm okay, that's going to be fun. I think that could really help our movement. There's one here just recently, Scott Bissett, that I was going to get your take on. Now, this morning was the first I kind of looked into him, and I probably spent, I don't know, 5 minutes or so and just kind of glanced. And I noticed
deep research there, 5 minutes.
Yes, right, 5 minutes. Yeah. Just did a 30,000 foot view, and he seems to be very successful in what he does. Obviously, he's a friend of J.D. Vance prior to being knowing Trump, and he's helped with Trump and his presidential campaign. But there was one thing, and I want to be fair here. He was connected with George Soros Fund. However, there are tens of thousands of employees, and there's also the fact he did quit. So he is not so committed to the point that he still works for them. But on the other hand, just seeing the name in general gives me great hesitation. But there's, you do understand the dilemma there, but he's also good at what he does. So how much do you think his original connection has anything to do with his potential job, because he's been asked to be the treasurer?
Yeah, and that's a question and a red flag that a lot of conservatives are raising. And Scott Bissent did an interview actually before he was named to Treasury with Morning Wire from Daily Wire. And I was listening to that interview a couple of days ago. And he said as part of that, you know, listen, that as you mentioned, there were a ton, you know, there were hundreds of employees. This wasn't, you know, a personal loan or anything. And he basically distanced from it. And I actually raised this point this morning with my guest on Jenna Ellis in the Morning, Dinesh D'Souza. And he raised a really important point as well, that even though the name George Soros to all of us now is a synonymous with, you know, leftist, World Economic Forum, incredibly just terrible liberal leftist policy agendas.
Yes, as bad as it gets.
As bad as it gets. You know, 10 years ago when this loan was given, he wasn't quite the same George Soros in terms of affecting, you know, a lot of
That's
this
right.
as much as it was today. And so we do need to recognize that it is very different and see that, you know, just a loan. I mean, Trump himself took a loan from George Soros. That's been well documented in reports. And clearly that hasn't affected, you know, his policymaking. And he's not a friend of George Soros. And so perhaps the same can be said
That's
for Scott Bessent.
Yeah.
And I was actually very convinced by Dinesh D'Souza's response this morning. And I thought that his comments on that kind of distance was fair. And and I think for a lot of these, we do need to kind of step back and say, okay, well, we can raise concerns and we should. To me, one of the bigger issues that I know Walker has raised as well is that we need to also be advocating for the Trump transition team to put social conservatives into key positions. And maybe rather than criticize a lot of the current picks, advocate more for these positions that have yet been filled to be filled with conservatives and Christians, like especially in the HHS.
Yes, that's a good. That's what I was about to say. Especially in the areas that they can actually influence social conservative ideas.
Yep. Yes. Yes, 100%. And there are still a lot of opportunities for Trump picks, and especially with staffing and with the people who will populate these agencies.
Alex?
Yeah, Jenna. Hi, Alex here.
Hi.
You know, Trump, I think you probably would agree with this, that when he's got a pick, even if prima facie there's some red flags, he's got his reasons. And generally, I would say those are probably good reasons. I don't know. I think he knows what he's doing, and he doesn't really, not a lot takes him by surprise. Would you agree?
Well, I would hope so. And I would hope that certainly he's learned from 2016 when he came in as, you know, kind of the outsider. And Dinesh was also mentioning this morning that, you know, he really didn't know how Washington worked, and he kind of didn't know the profound ideological swamp and just the rot that's in a lot of these agencies that I think he's a lot more aware of now. And so I do think he's going into a second term a lot more open-minded. And what's been really fascinating to me to see is that there have been very, very few picks from anyone who is a holdover from his last term. I mean, this is almost all a brand new
team.
That's
a good point. Yep.
Hey, Jenna, I got to ask that. Dinesh, he's great. He's been a family friend for 18 years. Did he mention his movie Vindicating Trump, which came out before the election? It was really aimed at trying to help people vote for Trump. And, you know, I'm glad he did it. But did he mention that movie in any of the research in your conversation?
You know, he didn't on this particular interview. I know he's talked about that quite a lot on his show. And I haven't yet seen that movie, but I know a lot of my friends have and have spoken very highly of it.
It's fantastic. It really is. Just the degree to which Trump has withstood, you know, media scrutiny and unfair, you know, bias. But I'm glad you had him on. Dinesh, he's a public intellectual who is a national treasure, really.
He is. And, you know, just personally as well, Dinesh and Debbie, his wife, you know, really supported me throughout the whole lawfare and all of that. And, you know, and stood up for me against a lot of the lies that, you know, were told, especially after, you know, resolving the cases that I did. And so I really appreciate his friendship and willingness to, you know, stand with me and just always tell the truth, because that's what we should be about as Christians and conservatives.
Jenna, sure. One more question before we let you go. I'm going to lean into your legal expertise here. Tom Homan is President-elect Trump's selection to be border czar. And boy, he is talking tough when it
I
comes
love it.
Yeah, deportation. I love it. And of course, on the flip side are these Democrat mayors and governors saying, you're not going to come into our state, you're not going to come into our city and arrest these illegal aliens. Where do you see that going legal-wise? Because there seems to be, you know, state rights, federal rights, all of this. And Tom Homan, basically, in the latest edition of this battle already, the mayor of Denver saying, you know, come on, I'm willing to be arrested And Tom Holman this morning, an interview with Fox, is saying, okay, if you want to be arrested, I'll sure. go along with that.
Oh, yeah. It was great. He said, we agree on one thing. He's willing to go to jail, and I'm willing to put him in jail, I mean, which was such a fantastic response. But, you know, Florida governor, my governor, Ron DeSantis, who, you know, I absolutely love. I think we need more governors like him. He posted in response to this, specifically the Denver mayor, he said local officials have no authority to obstruct a federal enforcement of immigration laws, and any who attempt such obstruction in Florida will be held accountable. And he's speaking just to Florida, but he's absolutely right on a broader scale. I mean, this is an issue that is constitutionally in Article 1, Section 8, given to Congress and the federal government. And of course, the rationale for that is that if California and Colorado and New York, you know, have different immigration policies, then that will necessarily affect the rest of the nation. So we need one uniform rule of immigration and naturalization, which is the text of the Constitution that gives that subject matter specifically to the federal Congress, and then, of course, to the federal executive to enforce. And so Tom Homan and Governor DeSantis and, you know, all of the others and, you know, in the federal government are, and of course, DeSantis ceding to the federal government are on very solid legal grounding to say, no, sorry, you can't just have these sanctuary city states. You can't obstruct the federal government from coming in and enforcing immigration law. Where I think the interesting legal challenges are going to be is if there is some kind of legal predicate for an immigration rule that Congress has devised, like amnesty, for example, that maybe is being implemented in a way outside of the statutory bounds that then has to be adjudicated by the court. So that's probably more where the legal battle is going to be. But as far as the federal ability to actually enforce the law, that's completely a federal issue. It's not up to the states to determine what they're going to do.
Jenna, I think we can all agree it is going to be an interesting ride under a Donald Trump presidency. Once again,
absolutely.
Hey, listen, we hope we have a great Thanksgiving, a good time, and enjoying that. What kind of ham was it?
Yeah, the honey baked ham.
You can't mess that up. In fact, don't even try. Don't even try to cook one if you hadn't.
I'm pretty sure pork is going to be my cause of death.
Oh yeah,
it's my favorite of the meats.
Hey, what about the puppies? What do they get to eat for Thanksgiving?
Yeah. Oh, they definitely get some ham and turkey. They're fans of turkey, so
okay.
You know they will. They will definitely be in turkey coma. And if people want to see the aftermath of that, you can follow them on Instagram at The Adventures of Copper and Todd. Of course, they're going to be celebrating Thanksgiving with me and my family. So
right.
Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. And I'm so thankful for AFA. And I just have to say thank you all so much for your friendship to me and my puppies and the family. I just love being at AFA and the ministry that we get to do together every day.
So let me ask you a quick question. What about your program over the holiday or over Thanksgiving break? You have a pre-record, you got a special recording or a rerun, what you got?
Yeah, so for tomorrow, actually, we have a special Thanksgiving episode that we're going to then re-air on Thanksgiving.
Good.
And it's just about the Christian view of giving thanks, and I have a couple of really fantastic guests, so you're not going to want to miss that.
Amen.
All right, Jenna, take care.
Thanks, happy Thanksgiving.
Okay, bye for now.
Thanksgiving.
All right, Chris, we got a few minutes left before a news break. Go ahead.
Yes, Alec Baldwin, who likes to find himself in the news.
He shoots himself in the foot a lot.
He sure does. See what you did there, as they say in Kannada. But yeah, Alec Baldwin is in the news this time for making comments that basically Americans are ignorant and low-information voters here. Don't take my word for it. Clip 6.
There is a gap, if you will, in information for Americans. Americans are very uninformed about reality, what's really going on with climate change, Ukraine, Israel, you name it, all the biggest topics in the world. Americans have an appetite for a little bit of information.
Now, before we get your reaction, we can play some reaction from somebody weighing in on this. It's Fox News contributor Joe Concha, who said this, clip 7.
If Americans need to be educated on anything, it's the fact that you shot and killed your director on a movie set and then claimed you never pulled the trigger when you did. Are we informed about that? Americans are actually more educated, Todd, on the issues than ever before. That's thanks to all the new options that we have, new news outlets available than ever before. I'm going to age myself here, but when I was growing up, we had three channels to get our news from here in the New York, New Jersey area, CBS, NBC, and ABC. CNN was only in its infant stages, and you had to have this thing called cable in order to watch that. Then in 1996, along came Fox News. And about a decade later, we had places like Facebook and Twitter and all these other social media options. So in 2024, we now have great podcasts. There are options now, and this is something that Alec Baldwin needs to come to understand, that legacy media doesn't have the monopoly over information anymore, and that's a good thing.
All right, Alex McFarland. Does it really matter anymore what the Hollywood elites think? Do they have any credibility?
Listen, to all of the Hollywood elites, from Alec Baldwin to Oprah Winfrey and all of the people, Whoopi Goldberg, The View, Joy Behar, hey, listen, it's the sound of nobody caring what you guys think.
Very literally.
Hey, so Alec Baldwin doesn't think we know much. I know not to point a loaded gun at somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been to L.A., been to New York. I've heard them, they talk about flyover country.
Mm.
Now that is middle America, that they really look down with such condescension that we're unenlightened. You know, those folks need to get saved.
Yeah.
They don't know the Lord most times, and they don't know reality much of the time. But,
Wesley, it's not just the Alec McFarlane, and it's not just the ladies on The View and others. It's the mainstream media, and there's been a wake-up call as a result of this election, especially the so-called legacy media. They thought they could just repeat the lies of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and everybody would believe them.
And it has worked for many years. The biggest change, and I think what's helped Trump out a lot, along with many things he did well and trying to run or winning this past election, is he went on many, many different podcasts, large podcasts, podcasters that had millions, in some cases, a couple of million followers, that bypassed, even went beyond Fox.
Yes.
He went on some pretty conservative, pretty hard right shows that were even further past Fox. And so I think that helped him out a lot. And that also showed that many people are looking for that type of content. They're looking for an alternative to the mainstream media, which between 80% and 90% is far left. And uninterested in having I forget what it was, but we played a clip where it was on CNN or MSNBC, but they were having a discussion about using pronouns, and they ran one guy off the stage. They wouldn't even let him have a word because he misused.
Uh-huh.
But he was on their team, but he was just making a point that other people
done.
And so the idea now is that on MSNBC and CNN and all these other ones, they're not even allowing a different alternative even to make fun of.
Right. Yep.
They wouldn't even allow.
But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. That, we're seeing this now at the Washington Post. We're seeing it at the LA Times. The owners, the people who pay the bills, because they're losing so many subscribers, CNN is laying off people.
Yeah. So my Morning Joe had to go down to Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah, that's that's amazing. But, what's going to win this, Chris, I think, is the bottom line, and that's money.
Yes.
You're losing subscribers, you're losing viewers, and the bosses at the networks, at these major newspapers are saying, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, every once in a while there would be a victory in this area, but now really hardly a month goes by without seeing some gain in this effort, and I think it goes to show you, to Joe Concha's point, the reach that people have now to get their point across. It's not three channels anymore. It's a whole bunch of information. Talk radio, talk radio survived the invention of television.
Yeah.
People still today are reached by a radio. Even though television's out there, you get your phone in your hand and all kinds of things. There are positives out there. We cover them a lot, AFN.net. Steve Jordahl does a lot of stuff in the DEI category for us, as does Bronson Woodruff and a few others. So do continue to to check out our website as well as our radio newscast, because we are on top of these stories, and there will be more tomorrow and henceforth.
Hey, listen, go ahead, Alex.
98% of all Americans hear a car radio at least once a week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, radio is still very relevant. But you know what's really wild is, I don't know if you guys remember back in October, Hillary Clinton said, and I quote, she said, "If we allow free speech on social media, we will lose control."
Mm.
I mean, we could do an entire show on the implications of that statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
But here's the thing. Podcasts and social media and many great conservative and Christian conservative voices out there on social media, they've made the traditional big three media, I'm not going to say irrelevant, but much, much less relevant than they were even a couple of years ago.
Now, to Alex's point, what's interesting here with Hillary and all these other people out there that have spent months, years really, trying to convince you that Republicans are Nazis and Trump is Hitler, they're the ones out there saying we have to squelch all this speech. We have to make exactly. New social media laws. You can't say that on the radio. It's misinformation. And they want you to believe the other guy's evil.
Well, I wonder. I've got a question. Wes, I'll throw it to you, Alex. Is Elon Musk going to buy MSNBC?
Oh, I don't mind. That's the first I've heard of this. Is that an option, or are you just speculating?
Is this breaking news?
NBC,
Wall Street Journal has
NBC has carved off MSNBC and a couple of the other.
Oh, yeah, CNBC and USA Network. The NBC Universal wants to kind of spin them off into their own.
Has carved those off, okay. So they're their own entity. What would happen if Elon Musk actually purchased
this? Oh, it would be the same impact in news media as it has been in social media when he bought X.
Yeah.
Or
Alex?
Twitter.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be something? And then, of course, then you... Hey, listen. Elon Musk, could he afford them? Yeah.
He still had billions after he bought Twitter.
That's right.
And that would be like a pack of chewing gum.
We will wait and see. But you heard it first here on American Family
Radio.
Yeah, me
excited. Yes. That would be awesome.
All right, listen, much more ahead on this edition of Today's Issues. Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, right after the news, Steve Jordahl will join us for much more news of the day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.